Welcome back. You're listening to Downtown SLC. I'm your host, Jason Mathis with the Downtown Alliance. Welcome to the first week of 2017. A lot in store for our downtown area, for our community this year in 2017. Joining me today are two of my favorite people in the world. You're smiling and laughing, but it's sincere. My dear friend, Stan Penfold. Stan and I have been friends for 15 years? I don't know. A really long time. Hi, Stan.
Hi, Jason.
Stan is a city council member representing District 3. He's my city council member, and he is also the executive director of the Utah AIDS Foundation. So, Stan, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And Derek Kitchen. Derek is also a city council member representing District 4. Also a dear friend. Derek is one of the owners and proprietors of Lizzie's. Or is it, what do you call it these days? Lizzie's Spreads, but then you change the name to Lizzie's
Kitchen.
Foods? Kitchen, Lizzie's Kitchen. An amazing new deli that you and Moody, your husband, just opened on the outskirts of our downtown area in the fabulous Central 9th neighborhood. And what we want to talk about today was not your full-time jobs, but a little bit about your council work, and in particular, plans to address solutions for homeless people in our community in 2017. So, gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Stan, maybe we can start with you. You have a long history in working in social service work professionally, and you've been behind the scenes. I know you've actually played a really big role in thinking about this. When Mayor Becker originally started to put a commission together, I don't know that everyone knows, but you actually were helping to think about that and help to guide that it needed to be a thoughtful, community-led discussion. You worked with Mary Delamar Schaefer and Jill Love to help put this whole thing together a couple of years ago. Where do you feel like we're at right now? At this sort of precipice, and what do you think is going to happen in 2017?
Well, I'll start, Jason, by saying one of the things I loved about that site selection committee process were the two co-chairs, Palmer DePaulis, former mayor, who was instrumental in setting up the current homeless services programming 30 years ago. And Gail Miller, representing herself, but also bringing with her a desire to improve the situation of people who are struggling when they're living downtown and on the streets.
She's kind of Utah's grandma in some ways.
She really is.
Such a compassionate, thoughtful person.
Well, and they both made incredible commitments to the process that was about an 18-month process that really helped us look at some fundamental criteria for what we would consider when we were looking at locations. But I think the other thing they helped us do was really force us to look at a new model for mm-hmm. providing homeless services. And one of the things we all are aware of, I think, and more aware of every day, is that the model that we developed 30 years ago, although it may have been appropriate 30 years ago, isn't working today.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of agreement around that. There's also a lot of frustration around that.
And just to put that in context, the model really is locating sort of all of the services into a single neighborhood with one large shelter and then some ancillary services surrounding that shelter.
Right. And I think the significant component of that we're seeing the impact for is the idea of shelter mm-hmm. rather than the idea of housing or a place to stay. And that's one of the significant shifts I think we've seen in consideration of these new locations. And one of the things that is really hard for people to get their minds around, because we don't have a really good current model. There's a few smaller opportunities in the state. There are some certainly in other parts of the country, but the model we're shifting to is not just providing a bed for the night and then having people fundamentally on their own the rest of the time, but rather how do we identify the high-risk populations? How do we provide a location where they can feel safe and comfortable over a period of time with the primary goal of finding them housing,
yeah.
more stable housing.
I don't want to oversimplify, except it's something that I'm really good at. But it feels to me like what we've done in the past is sort of warehouse people. We've said we'll protect you from the elements, we'll give you food, but we won't always adequately address the underlying causes of your homelessness. We'll give you a bed or a bed card, or we'll let you sleep on the floor, and make sure you don't freeze to death, but there hasn't been maybe the thought of going into how do we stop people from becoming homeless in the first place, or how do we, once people do become homeless, how do we move them as quickly as possible, not just into homes, but to address whatever the underlying causes are of their homelessness. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I think it's very fair to say that we're putting a pretty radical spin on our traditional model. And it's not because anything was wrong at the time. The services evolved around the need at the time 30 years ago, and those needs have changed pretty dramatically, and we haven't kept up with it. Yeah. And so it's kind of a responsibility of all of us. Homelessness is one of those things where we don't like to think about it. We don't like to consider that it's actually happening in our communities. And so, unfortunately, I think that leads to some neglect around the need, and our homeless service providers have continued to do what they were charged to do, but with an old model and with very, very limited service resources in a pretty much exploding market of homelessness. I mean, our shelter was designed for 200 people, and, you know, 1,200 people are staying there every night, and certainly it was never considered adequate for that sort of volume.
Yeah. So, Derek, this all takes place in your district. I mean, you have represented this district. I know you've been very passionate about what's happened on Rio Grande Street, paid a lot of attention to that. You've been down there trying to address the situation and help people out. And some of the new resource centers will be in your district.
Half of the four.
So two new resource centers in your district. What are you thinking about all this? What's top of your mind, and how are you thinking about what we do during 2017 to move this process forward?
Well, just to piggyback on what Stan was saying, for so long we have had this one-size-fits-all model, and through the county's collective impact efforts, which brought in all the service providers, we are underway with a fundamental realignment of the way that we provide and pay for services to people experiencing homelessness in our community. And citing the new facilities, the new shelters, is really just the first step in us making significant changes to this whole system, which will ultimately lean on getting people into housing and into stability first and foremost. And then, of course, all of the wraparound services to ensure that people can be successful in the new model. But District 4 and the Rio Grande neighborhood in particular has shouldered the brunt of this for many, many years. And so the new scattered site model, where we break out individual subpopulations, will be a great relief to this neighborhood. And in addition to relieving some of that pressure in Rio Grande, it'll create opportunities for other neighborhoods to step up to the plate, to play a part in helping to treat individuals experiencing homelessness. And I also think, on the other hand, if we think about this strategically, the development of these new facilities can be economic development drivers for individual neighborhoods. So the second facility in District 4 will be on State Street and 7th South, just outside of the downtown boundary. Mm-hmm. And I see that as an up-and-coming neighborhood, and I see this as an opportunity for us to help the development of this neighborhood. And so, you know, I feel really positive about the direction we're going, and see all the stakeholders at the table. We really need the community to step up as well and to look for ways that they can help in a positive, productive way. And you have 7 council members that are here willing to help and to take on any concerns that are inevitably going to arise out of the development of these new facilities.
May I just point something out, that you have really put your money where your mouth is, that you and Moody's investment in Lizzie's Kitchen in the Central Night neighborhood just opened within the past month, I believe.
Yes.
You did that knowing that the new Volunteers of America Homeless Youth Resource Center was being built with less than a block away, that is a new facility in some ways based, you know, we'll have some similarities with these new resource centers, but you made a conscious decision to invest in this project within half a block of a homeless resource center as a business owner.
And as a resident as well, I've lived next, you know, on 8th South and 4th West for about 4 years. And my partner and I had been great advocates of the new VOA Youth Resource Center when they were going through the conditional use process. And so we want that in our neighborhood as residents. And then that did not, as you mentioned, deter us from making a significant investment in our business in the neighborhood. It's because this facility was designed well. Mm-hmm. The current facility on Rio Grande Street formerly was a produce distribution and warehouse, and we retrofitted that to house homeless people. And moving forward with the new facilities, we will be able to design them with the unique quality and character that they need to have in order to ensure stability, security, public safety, and that we can provide services in the appropriate manner. So I see that the new facilities as a fundamental shift in the homeless shelter model. But I always look to, in addition to the VOA Youth Resource Center, the YWCA over on 3rd South and 3rd East, as you know, underwent some pretty massive renovations and upgrades a few years back. And, you know, just some of the statistics show that in the last 6 years, property values just to the west have increased around 31%. Yeah. And so there's a major concern among many in the community that these new facilities will drag down property values. And to be honest, that may not be the case.
Yeah, it seems like if you look at VOA's Homeless Youth Resource Center, YWCA, as two examples, that in fact has not been the case because those facilities were designed well. They were designed with security in mind. They were designed to serve populations and not just as a warehouse, which is what we've kind of seen on Rio Grande.
In some ways, they've acted as catalytic economic drivers for neighborhoods, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to continue our conversation with Salt Lake City Council members Stan Penfold and Derek Kitchen. We are talking about changes and plans for homeless resource centers in 2017. We'll be back after these messages. We are back. You're listening to Downtown SLC on KCPW. I'm your host, Jason Mathis. This is a show that explores the people, places, and events shaping Utah's urban center. Joining me today, two of Salt Lake City's finest council members. And you both, even though, Stan, you don't represent downtown officially, you have been an unofficial representative for the downtown community for many years. And so we appreciate your ongoing support of downtown Salt Lake City.
Well, it's a pleasure, and it's actually being the representative from the Avenues, Capitol Hill, Marmalade neighborhood, we're immediately adjacent to downtown. So what happens downtown is really important to the people who live in those neighborhoods. And frankly, we love the downtown, and so we want to see the best things happen there.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. And Derek, an outstanding addition to our city. We are very grateful for your work. In just less than a year, you've already made a significant difference in improving our downtown area as a new member of the council. When we left to go off break, we were talking about the impact that we feel like these new resource centers might have in communities and some concrete examples of existing facilities in our city that are already making a positive impact in the community and changing the lives for the better for the people that they're serving. Derek, maybe we'll start with you. What do you hope to see 2 years from now as these facilities open up? What do you hope to see for the lives of the homeless people, for the providers, for the communities where these resource centers are, and for the Rio Grande neighborhood?
Well, my primary hope is that we can begin to better help people who experience homelessness find stable housing.
Mm-hmm. You really ran on that, on a need for affordable housing. That was one of your main planks in your campaign, if I remember right, from last year.
It absolutely was. If you look at any urban center across the country, across the world for that matter, affordable housing is an issue. And it's an issue in Salt Lake City, no doubt, and it will continue to be an issue unless we make some significant steps toward addressing not only our gaps in affordable housing, but staying ahead of the curve. And it's important in us addressing homelessness, but also just for the general quality of life for, you know, the broader citizens of Salt Lake. And so affordable housing is going to be a pressing issue indefinitely. But in order for us to achieve our goals for homelessness, we have to pull online around 7,500 units or so of affordable housing units that are below 40% AMI.
And what is that? Because some listeners might not know what 40% of AMI refers to.
The area median income, so 40% of
people who are making 40% of the average
or below.
Wage or below. Okay.
Indeed. And so, you know, my hope for 2 years from now is that the broader community will begin to have a better understanding of the new model and some confidence in where we're headed, as well as we will see a good chunk of the new housing units coming online or in the pipeline, because we have to build it. We have a 2% vacancy rate right now in Salt Lake. It's really a game of supply and demand, so we have to build new housing stock if we're going to get a grip on this. And so my hope is that, you know, we'll see development and neighborhood growth as a part, a positive step toward addressing homelessness. But my hope as well is that, you know, we may see something from the state as far as Medicaid expansion goes, because really we're doing a lot of this with one hand tied behind our back, because if we can't treat people sufficiently for mental or physical health, if they don't have those resources available to them, we're only getting halfway.
Yeah. You speak to what a complicated issue this is. It's not just about housing for people. That's part of it. It's also mental health issues. It's substance abuse issues. It's an opioid epidemic that's gripped the country. It's infiltration of drug cartels into these neighborhoods. And Stan, you've talked a lot about what these resource centers will be. How will they be different than what's on Rio Grande Street? Because I think that's been a concern that people have had, that we'll just duplicate issues that have happened down in the Rio Grande neighborhood.
Well, I think the most significant difference is they're going to be quite a bit smaller. Yeah. We've capped these at 150 people max, and that's been critical for the city council, because all of the models we're looking at suggest two things. One, that reduces the impact in the local neighborhood where they're located, but two, it provides better services to the people who are accessing those centers. The more people you have in one location, the more difficult it is to provide adequate services. So that's going to be the significant improvement, I think, is a better access to service. The model changes because we look at some components like focusing on getting people in stable housing the moment they walk in. And even though we're looking at housing first models now, there's not a good connection between the service providers who are helping homeless people and the housing providers who are trying to provide stable housing for low-income, substance-using, or mentally ill individuals. And so the county's been working really hard to tighten that all up. They're the primary provider of those services in our county, and they are really committed to improving those services and really stabilizing the population. I think that's going to be one of the most important shifts in how we look at these services. We're really trying to get people into housing. The reason people are homeless on the streets is because they can't afford to live anywhere.
Right.
And so rethinking that model a little bit, from providing someone a bed because they don't have a place to sleep to providing someone a home because they can't afford their housing, is a pretty significant shift.
Yeah.
And it leads to a lot of the complicated factors that Derek was talking about. What's the role of the state? What are we doing about mental health issues, substance use issues? We need more treatment beds. We need more facilities for mentally ill. And that's going to be an ongoing issue, even beyond the two-year timeline that we're looking at and getting some construction done.
Yeah. I'll point out something that I've observed through this process. There's always a natural tension between the legislative and executive branches that is real and is supposed to happen. That is important. On this issue, at this point, you and Mayor Biskupski are really moving together in lockstep, that you have agreed on where these sites will be located, that you have agreed on the size of the sites, and that wasn't always the case. I think that she originally had wanted a larger shelter sites or larger resource centers. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the council and mayor working together in 2017, Derek?
Yeah, it's really important when we make generational decisions like this that we have all of our city and civic leaders on board and speaking the same language. This is politics. We're going to have disagreements, and I think that
rightly
that's fair.
So, like you should, yeah.
That's absolutely. And so, you know, like in 2016, 2017, we will all find a space to voice our concerns and our disagreements. But what's really important is that once we work through those, we come back to the table with a smile on and move forward as a team. Because really, as leaders, as folks who are doing a hard job to represent the community and make decisions that will be long lasting, it's really important that we do it together.
Yeah.
And so I feel really good about, you know, continuing to develop and strengthen the relationship between the city council and the mayor. And, you know, she's been in the job for 1 year. It's a big job to be mayor.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, it's been a steep learning curve for sure. And my hope is that 2017 will be a bit easier.
Yeah, I think that that's probably the case. Stan, what are your thoughts about 2017?
Well, I think one of our challenges will be to look at providing services in sort of these two simultaneous tracks. We're on a good process for new resource center locations, and we'll be having a community process about mitigation in the neighborhood and conditional use. And so that's sort of on its way, and hopefully construction will start relatively soon. We're on a pretty aggressive schedule. But I think one of the things that council's been really aware of and the mayor campaigned on was this need for affordable housing. And one of the challenges with the homeless conversation is that the resource centers or the shelter conversation sort of takes all the energy. Yeah. And we have to simultaneously be looking at how do we provide housing units. And that's almost as big a lift as the shelter conversation.
In some ways bigger financially. That's a big challenge.
And you heard Derek say 7,500 units. I think we need 1,200 units almost immediately. We need 1,200 units online when the resource centers come online.
Like yesterday.
And so, yeah, we could use them now.
Yeah.
And so that's something I think we're going to have to put as much energy in the next year, certainly, because the construction timeline is about the same. You're looking at an 18-month once you sort of have a shovel in the ground for some of these projects. And we can't fully address our homeless concerns if we aren't looking at where people are going to live.
Yeah. Gentlemen, we unfortunately are out of time. We could keep talking about this for a long time, and I'll invite you to come back through the year for a status update, if that's okay.
Please do.
We'd love to.
Let me just say thank you for your hard work on this. It's a difficult and emotional issue. There are no easy solutions. There's no silver bullet. It's not like you say, if we just did X, Y, or Z, the problem would go away and everyone would live happily ever after. It's a lot of work. So on behalf of the Downtown Alliance, let me just say thanks to both of you and the council and the mayor and Mayor Ben McAdams and state leaders who are all involved. Thanks for your hard work, and I know it's not over yet.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.